I would rather have a day job than be a Pokemon master.
Han Solo is clearly more attractive than Indiana Jones.
I would take the Star Wars trilogy over the Matrix trilogy any time.
The Legend of Zelda versus Super Mario. Who's better in bed, Jafar or Gaston? And would Thanos masturbate with the Infinity Gauntlet or not? Every week, Nerd Rage the Great Debates brings you the funniest comics, writers, and podcasters to settle some of geekdom's most divisive topics. Find us on Spotify or wherever you find podcasts.
To the Escapist Comics Podcast. I'm Jessica Balboni.
And I'm Robert Neguesco.
And today is Sunday, August 29th, 2021. And we're talking about comics, as per usual. But first, let's talk about our weekends. How was your weekend?
Oh, pretty good. I bought Metallica tickets.
Ooh, wait, are you going to that big show?
It's
Sacramento.
No. Oh, okay. January 7th. December 17th and 19th, they're celebrating their 40th anniversary as a band.
Mm.
And it's going to be at the something center in San Francisco.
Oh, the Chase Center?
Yeah, it is.
Where the Warriors play.
It is the Chase Center. I've never been there, but I mean, gotta go see Metallica.
I'm going to see them at Aftershock.
That's the festival?
That's the festival, yeah.
Okay.
We'll see how that goes. But at least it's outdoors.
Yeah. No, it'll be good. I mean, this one, you're required to have COVID vaccination to enter the show.
Yeah.
I'm not worried about that. I just want to see Metallica. And also, festivals are not, to me, the best place. You get to see a lot of bands.
Right.
But with less focus, I guess. It's more like scattershot.
Yeah.
So they're just completely different experiences.
Yeah. You have to have a vaccination as well at the Aftershock Fest, and I think about half of the people won't be able to go now that want to go to Aftershock.
Yeah.
So I'm excited about that.
It's very interesting what will happen. But I'm excited about seeing the show. Other than that, I don't think I did much.
Yeah. I went to Hamilton on Friday.
Ooh, how was that?
It was great, except for we took BART, which is the worst mistake we took. It was, I'm never taking BART ever again.
No.
Nope. Decided public transportation is out for me.
Hard to get places without BART.
Yeah, well, BART is terrible now. So, getting there was fine. Like, they actually have these, like, brand new trains.
Yeah.
And they're, like, really nice and really clean. But I thought they replaced all the trains. I was wrong. No.
It's slowly, I think.
Yeah, and they don't have any, like, train operators anymore, apparently, either. Are they called conductors on BART?
I don't know.
I mean,
they're trains. They're just underground trains.
Right,
but
underground conductors.
Yeah, I think so.
Well, anyway, so on our way back, there was only like three trains that existed in the entirety of BART, apparently. And there's no more Richmond trains at night. Like, there's only...
So they scaled back the schedules.
Yeah, they scaled back the schedules, but they don't tell you that anymore.
Oh.
They just, even like when we went to the Orpheum, they said, like, BART's running again, take BART. We're like, okay, let's take BART. And then it was fine on our way there. But on the way back, we had to take, the train was 45 minutes late getting to the station. And then when we transferred at 19th Street, it was another 45 minutes, like, waiting at 19th Street.
Well.
So, yeah.
To help you cope with your public transport needs, let's talk problems. Let's talk about the Shang-Chi trailer.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
What a segue.
What a segue.
So, I mean, a guy with a laser-looking katana slices a Muni bus in half, which is not BART. Muni is not BART.
No.
Different organizations.
Different. I'd rather have been on that bus. Than
the
been
bus?
On
bus. Not the one that flipped through the air, though?
No, maybe not that one, but at least it would have been entertaining to watch that.
Yeah.
Instead, I had to watch this really creepy guy hit on, like, three different women. And
oh, yeah.
Then
I've seen that before.
Yeah. And then my husband almost, like, get into a fight with him. Like, over it.
That's fun.
Yeah.
Well, your husband can be Shang-Chi.
Yeah, he can be Shang-Chi.
Did he have a laser katana, this guy?
No, he had luckily he had no laser katana, just a cell phone where he was trying to use it to translate to, because he only spoke mostly Spanish, and he was like using it to try to hit on them. He was,
that's creative.
He was even better. Yeah.
Creative.
And when one woman would say no, he would just go to the next one.
Oh, yeah. I've seen, that's what I've seen exactly on BART, is like a script that is directed at every single woman who walks in front of them. I've seen a guy do it like 6 times, the exact same words, mm-hmm. and I was like, oh, wow, this is
really gross.
You're like a, I don't know, like a machine gun with that or something. It's like, I'm going to hit somebody. Like, right. I don't know how to do this,
I don't
but
know
I'm
if going to work, but it's going to work
maybe
eventually.
Hit or hit on somebody.
It's not.
I hope it doesn't work, but it's
so gross.
Just pure odds. It has to.
This one woman was so, she was so nice that she just like couldn't get him to go away, and I was just like sitting like with my hands like in my head like just please stop, just walk away. And then finally we had to say something because she just like, she looked so like nervous and upset. But she definitely needed, oh, and a Shang-Chi. She needed Shang-Chi.
Yes.
So apparently we've been saying this wrong for 40 years.
Yeah. Not Shang.
Not Shang-Chi.
Shang. He explains it to Awkwafina and she has a problem with it too, I guess.
It's not just us. Awkwafina also says this wrong. So yeah, in this last trailer, they give us a lot more comic relief via Awkwafina. We see a little bit more of the Abomination. A lot more monsters in general. There's like that lion monster.
Yeah, lion thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I'm interested in that, just having sort of monsters in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, because mm-hmm. there are, I mean, I don't know, whatever. I don't mean monster in like they're evil or whatever, because there's that dragon, who's, I'm sure, but just like creatures, mystical creatures and stuff like that. Things that aren't these beings of science,
right,
per se. Mm-hmm. Like, maybe they are, but I don't. To me, they're mythical. It looks like more mythical side. And
definitely,
it seems like they're opening up to that in general, you know, with like Doctor Strange being in Spider-Man,
right.
The Doctor Strange movie coming out, Shang-Chi. Like,
it's going to be hard to get just, into that.
Yeah. But just all the magic and mystical elements like being allowed to come in now,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, I mean, when you look back at like how Marvel started, it's like very like, grounded. It's like you got two like people on mm-hmm. the team who like one's a bow and one's got guns. It's
right.
like guy science guy with shield, man in robot suit. Like the whole, Thor is like the craziest thing, but like now we're getting more of that, and I that's very cool to me.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, it all comes from like the like Journey into Mystery and Amazing Fantasy. All of those ones had like the monster elements, right? And all those like Kirby monsters that he used to draw.
Of course.
And so they're going to bring, I feel like they're going to bring those into it now, which is really fun.
I would love that, because in all honesty, they don't, you know, that is pre-Marvel, but they don't really like factor into, I'm sure here and there they've done stuff, but like, you know, they're not a huge part of the Marvel universe. It'll be an occasional enemy, but it'd be like, you know, they've done all these events, yet I can't think of, like, why haven't they done a monster event? Or, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it seems like that stuff just isn't tapped into as much as it could be.
Right.
I mean, there's so much there, but, like, yeah, you have the rich history of monsters. And
yeah.
I mean, and then it makes me think, who knows? Are we going to get a Western someday, you know? Like, that'd be cool. But
it would
like,
be.
It's like, there is so much there that isn't ever tapped into.
Yeah.
You know, that it's like, are the movies going to be the ones to take those chances? Because right, movies have a longer history of like the Western than comics, I would think. I mean, or we think of it that way, like comics are identified with superheroes, but movies, like the Western is the American
right
myth that is the superhero is now taken, right? It's taken that like position as like, no, this is what we do.
Yeah.
I guess.
I mean, they've tried it before and it hasn't worked out, but they always have to add some kind of like machine element. Like the Will Smith.
Oh, yeah. Or Cowboys versus Aliens.
Yeah.
Or, yeah. Just weird modern elements and stuff.
Yeah,
and it's like,
then it doesn't work out.
No, but the best Westerns have, like, a different speed. They're a different pace.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Ennio Morricone. Sergio Leone.
Sergio Leone.
It's just slow. Like, slow. The world was slow.
Right.
Yeah. But, I don't know. We'll
So we also watched the Eternals trailer. And this one, they say final trailer. I feel like there'll be one more.
Yeah. with all of them.
Yeah.
Maybe with Eternals, I mean, not Shang-Chi, that one, I don't think is lying.
Yeah, that's next week, September 3rd.
Maybe there'll be another one.
Right before.
So that's cool that'll be out soon, too.
Yeah, and this looks very different from Spider-Man or Shang-Chi.
Yeah, yeah.
We see, again, a lot more of all of the characters. Angelina Jolie.
Selma Hayek.
Yeah, Selma Hayek. Selma Hayek's the first one we've seen.
She's a cowboy, speaking of the Western.
Yeah. And she says Thanos, but we keep, both of us heard Talos.
Talos wiped out.
Yeah.
Yes. All of, I mean.
Who is a character in the comics?
Who? Talos?
Talos, yeah.
I mean, I'm sure that's somebody. They've mined all the gods' names and everything. Everybody's somebody. I should have brought my Handbook of the Marvel Universe encyclopedias. I know,
remembered who he is.
But, yeah, it does look like this one has a different tone than the other movies.
Yeah, a little bit darker.
Yeah, like, or sort of like underlying grimness to it, or bleakness, I guess. I mean, it's not going to be that bleak, not really bleak, but for a Marvel movie, it might have a different tone.
Well, it looks like they might have taken a lot of stuff from the Neil Gaiman run, probably more so than the Kirby run. Probably mixed both of them together.
Yeah.
It looks like it has that feeling from it.
I haven't read the Gaiman stuff. I've read the Kirby stuff.
Yeah.
I know that the director said specifically that she did look at the Kirby stuff, but I don't know. She probably looked at all of it.
Yeah.
There's not that much history of Eternals, so if you're taking on that movie, I'm sure you're just reading all of it.
Yeah, definitely.
Like, it's not like, oh, you're directing Spider-Man? You're not going to read all the Spider-Man. No.
That would be crazy.
Impossible.
Yeah.
I've always thought about that. Like, if you get that job, how much research do you start doing? It's like, do you go back? You got to go back. But, I'd be daunted.
Right.
With certain characters.
Well, I'm sure you have lots of assistants to do all of your reading.
Sure.
Just, you sit there and they run down all of it for you.
Yeah. Just wikis, writing your own personal wikis.
Exactly.
But yeah, we got, it's all just moves fast. You have to, kind of know what's going on with these trailers to even, jump. What is his name? I don't know the actor's name. Jon Snow, who's playing,
Kit Harington
playing Dane Whitman, the Black Knight. You get him for, a second.
Yeah, you barely even see him, because it's the other guy, no, I don't remember, the other, the brother Icarus. Of Jon Snow.
Oh, Icarus? I don't know the actor's name, but, Madden?
Yes.
Richard Madden. I'm pulling that out of my head.
Yeah.
Wow.
I pulled Kit Harington. Good job.
And I
hey, we remember things today.
I didn't
today.
Even watch Game of Thrones. Okay.
What?
But Icarus. We get some Icarus shooting lasers out of his eyes action, which is nice.
Mm-hmm.
Melting some deviants.
Oh, speaking of deviants. Going right back to Selma Hayek. So we talked about this a little bit in the store earlier this week, too. So they destroy deviants. That's their job, right? They're on Earth.
7,000 years ago, they were sent to Earth.
Right. Why didn't they do anything about Thanos, then, if he is half deviant? It makes no sense.
Or part deviant, or has a deviant gene, or whatever the hell the explanation is. Well, why wouldn't they, though?
On Wikipedia, it literally says he's half deviant.
Yeah. I don't know. It's all a very convenient sort of thing. I think it'll be explained
in the movie,
hopefully.
Right.
I mean, just like these trailers, this brings up the Spider-Man one, but maybe I'm getting ahead of myself. But there's some stuff in that where I was like, why would this happen? Okay, I'm going to wait for the movie, because this is a trailer.
All right, well, let's get into the Spider-Man trailer.
Okay.
So, Spider-Man No Way Home, is that right?
Yeah, broke records for most watched trailer or whatever. Outdid Infinity Wars trailer.
Wow.
Endgame
trailer. Okay.
So, it's like one of those things where it's like, if we weren't in a pandemic right now, you're looking at a contender for biggest movie of all time.
Wow.
I mean... As far as
yeah.
Right? Because it's like, Endgame, right, is like this culmination thing, but like Spider-Man, Spider-Man's that weird magic thing that just everyone connects to. It makes people feel like good.
Yeah.
You know, especially right now, I'm thinking people just want that.
Yeah.
That Spider-Man, like.
The second one didn't do as well.
No, the movie, no. Yeah. It also, I mean, in my opinion, wasn't as good.
It wasn't as good. But this one, I think, add Doctor Strange into it. I mean, everyone loves the Cumberbatch. So
I
love the Cumberbatch. I love Doctor Strange. He's one of my favorite characters in the Marvel Universe. I mean, I think people just connect to him in general. So that combination, I think, is going to be, I agree with you, it's going to be a huge hit.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, this in the second one, because basically every Spider-Man Marvel movie has been a team-up, Marvel team-up movie. It's like the first one, Iron Man. He's not there that much, but it's like, They're shoehorning Iron Man in there. That's the part that in that movie that feels weird to me.
Yeah.
The second one, it's Happy Hogan.
Right.
And it's like, that's not a draw.
No.
Sorry, Jon Favreau. Yeah. I know you're listening. But, yeah, you're not Iron Man or Doctor Strange.
Yeah.
Right? And it's like, Doctor Strange, like, we're going to see weird magic. And then Peter, who is a very still grounded character despite going to space and other dimensions and all this stuff. It's like, he's a kid, you know, just from New York.
Yeah.
Like, and to see him interact with that stuff, people do connect with him a lot, and the extraordinary things matched with him, I think, is, like, perfect pairing.
And people love Tom Holland in general.
Love him!
Too.
Why wouldn't you?
I know. He's great.
When I first saw Civil War, like, I was just like, oh, cool, yeah, Spider-Man's giving me this, whatever. And I'm like, I got, like, emotional. I was like, that's Peter.
Yeah.
That's him. Like, it was like, wow, that's the guy I know from the comics.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And so they give you a lot of teasers in this trailer, too. Just a lot of Easter eggs. I mean, it's a really, I think, a well-designed trailer, too. You know, we get some Goblin references.
Yeah, a laugh.
A laugh.
A cackle, that's
yeah.
all you need.
Mm-hmm.
With a great Willem Dafoe.
Yes, and of course, Dr. Octopus is in the end of the trailer.
Alfred Molina.
Mm-hmm.
Bone
young.
Chilling.
Looking very young.
Hello, Peter.
Yeah. So we know we're going to get a lot of multiverse stuff opening up in this.
And a million theories.
A million theories.
You see lightning a couple times, or in two different trailers we've seen lightning. So, and we have heard that Jamie Foxx Electro is going to be in there.
Yeah, that's confirmed.
Yeah, they just haven't shown us him. Mm-hmm. I think they're focusing on the Raimi stuff, which definitely has bigger cultural relevance.
Definitely,
And then, you know, I've had people who just watched it say they saw Sandman in there.
What?
I don't know. I don't think that he's there.
I don't think
but
Sandman, but
he could be in the movie.
That'd
be cool, because then it'd be one guy from each Raimi movie, and Sandman was the part in Spider-Man 3 that's awesome, I think. I think he's cool. I don't know. We'll see. We're getting a Sinister Six movie.
Yeah.
Spider-Man 4 is a Sinister Six movie, no matter what.
Yeah, definitely.
No matter what's going to happen,
yeah.
That's what we're going to get.
Yeah. So, who do you think the Sinister Six is going to be then?
Well, you got to bring back Michael Keaton.
Yeah, obviously.
And then, Alfred Molina, Doc Ock,
right.
Green Goblin, which, good luck working with that guy. Okay. Because he's, like, not a Sinister Six guy, traditionally, right? Like,
no.
he's too crazy. He's got his own, like, crime sort of thing.
Right.
I think for the movies, though, bring him in the fold that works for me. They laid the groundwork for Scorpion. I mean, I don't want a Scorpion, but if you can make me like Scorpion, please.
Right. They killed him already, it doesn't matter. Everything doesn't matter.
Mysterio's dead. I don't know if it would be
but
him.
But there's two Mysterio. There's three Mysterios?
How
three
mysterious.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know who the six will be. I think it could go a few different ways, you know, because it's like, what are they going to try and make the lizard one. I mean, that wouldn't make sense to me, but
yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, because a lizard is like good and bad.
It's a werewolf story.
Yeah,
lizard's a werewolf story.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, he's a nice guy who is a monster who doesn't want to be a monster.
Right.
But
Kraven's getting his own movie, right?
So weird.
It's so weird. We talked about that last time. But he should be in the Sinister Six. Like, he's one
yes.
of the main Sinister Six movies.
Yeah.
And I think if they give him his own movie, then maybe he will be in it, because it is a Sony crossover, right?
Yeah.
So maybe he'll be Morbius.
That would be nice. He's like not a bad guy either, though. No, he's like not. Just like a vampire guy who's kind of a jerk.
The living vampire.
Yes, he's alive. I know he's alive.
Oh, Lord. So we also watched What If this week as well.
Yeah.
So it was basically What If the Avengers all died.
Yeah.
Sort of.
Yeah.
And it was kind of a letdown, I thought, this week. I mean, the animation was still nice looking. I thought, like, the beginning was okay, like, when they're all, like, setting it up and, like, they were all getting offed. Yeah. But then when you find out, like, who does it, you know. Yeah.
Spoilers for What If, yeah, I guess.
If you haven't watched it this week.
For real. Some people have said they don't listen when the spoiler warning happens. Oh. It's like, what are you doing? Spoiler warning.
Yeah, spoiler.
We're going to act like you've seen it already.
Yeah. Black Widow mentions to Nick Fury, it's all about hope. It's all about hope. And first I thought she was saying Hulk. It's all about Hulk, and I was like, Mark, I was like, is it, she's saying Hulk or hope? And he's like, I don't know, is there a hope in the Avengers? And I was like, I mean, there was, but.
Yeah, hope.
But why
hope
would she be saying it in this? Because, you know, in the movies, they don't even really talk about hope that much at all. And anyways, and I was like, so Wasp, right? And then really quickly, they just like wrap it all up again. I mean, they've done that in the other episodes too.
I didn't catch the whole hope thing.
Okay.
But. I mean, so the first death is like Iron Man, right?
Right.
And she puts some syringe in him, and then he dies, which isn't... The syringe is supposed to help him with some sort of infection or...
Yeah.
Whatever. Nano-infection? I don't know. The second that happened, though, at least me personally, I was like, it's Ant-Man. He's in that syringe. Like, really? I just... Yeah, there's... I don't know if there's... I just was like, it's probably Ant-Man. In the syringe. Like, why else? I don't know where that came from, but I 1,000% called it. And so that, for me personally, made me just like... And then when it revealed itself, I was like, oh. I just thought that was some random thought I had. Because it didn't... As I didn't continue to be like, oh, yeah, it's definitely... I just had that... I was like, oh, like Ant-Man inside of a syringe. He could totally kill anybody.
Right.
I don't know. And then that's... What ended up happening?
Yeah.
Not the Ant-Man we know, but...
Yellow Jacket.
Or it was... it was Michael Douglas as Yellow Jacket.
Well, yeah, and he does become Yellow Jacket in the comics, right? And, like... And but, he's bad, and then... But then it was also saying, like, it was his daughter, which, I mean... I don't know. The whole thing with his... Like, that doesn't happen ever in the comics where he's, like... Because he becomes good again in the comics. Like, he's not a... I don't know. It was very annoying, like, the way they played it out.
Yeah, I just wasn't a fan.
No.
I've liked the previous two episodes of What If. The first one, pretty good. The second one, even more. But this one was, like, I put down there with, like, Thor the Dark World of all the, like, stuff Marvel's made.
Right.
In terms of, like, my enjoyment and the quality. Like, that one, this third episode was... Really, like I just flat out like hated it.
Yeah, I just didn't like it either at all. It was just such a letdown of what the mystery was.
Yeah,
because it was just Yellow Jacket is bad, but he's never that bad. He's never tried to kill anybody in the comics. Yeah. Like, I don't know.
I think the what if, the magic of this what if is the wonder that it can inspire in us of like the alternate potentials, and when it's just like what if all the Avengers died and then. Like, I read Heroes Reborn this year.
Right.
Right? Which is this crossover of, like, what if there were no Avengers? And that's not the story. The story isn't, why wasn't there the Avengers? It's this whole, spins out from there not being Avengers, which is we get in this one, a Justice League in the Marvel Universe.
Right.
But it's like, I thought, when I read the synopsis of this, oh, first 2 minutes... We're going to have some sort of explanation or 5 minutes that all the Avengers died. And then it's like, what happens to our world without that? And it's kind of that, but it's kind of more just like a mystery of who's killing them,
exactly.
Which I don't care about.
Yeah, I don't care about that either. And when they showed like Captain Marvel and stuff at the end, like I'd much rather have seen like, oh yeah, Captain Marvel and then somebody else, whoever is taking over.
Yeah,
and
her taking on greater importance because, you know, she said, well, they're like, why weren't you here? Well, there's a big universe, and they don't all have you guys.
Right.
So it's like, that could have been an opportunity for her to just, like, what if Captain Marvel had been on Earth? Or, you know, it could have been all sorts of different stuff.
Yeah.
It just didn't, it didn't have any hook for me, no. personally.
Yeah, it wasn't a good what if no. at all.
No, no. I much more prefer the big, grander, like, go ballistic. Like, the Peggy Carter one was pretty, like it's different, but it all made sense.
Yeah.
The Star-Lord one was, like, wild. Yeah. Like, wild, crazy shit. And I'm right. like, yes to that.
Yeah.
This one was the most conservative sort of, like, what if we just tell a little mystery story? And it's like, I don't know. I don't know if that's what...
Yeah, it's not what if is about, like, especially in the comics either, at all.
Yeah, yeah. There's always, like, a good concept involved.
Right. But there was another story this week in comic form, and it is basically a what if story, and it's yes. also about the Avengers dying.
Yes.
Pretty much.
That is true.
And Amazing Fantasy number 2 came out this week.
Kyle Andrews. Yeah. Rhymes with Atari. That's what I read on the Instagram.
That's a good phonetic way.
Yeah.
Yeah, so this story is... they should just do this as a what if. Because this is way better.
I'm sure. This is some wild stuff.
Yeah, and the art is still beautiful. I mean...
Frog people. Yeah.
The best covers in comics right now.
Yeah, we covered the issue one in, what was it, the previous episode or the one before that? It would have been the one before that.
Yeah.
So two episodes back, I think that would have been the podcast at the edge of time, maybe? I don't know. I think that's the episode, though, if you want to hear our coverage of Amazing Fantasy 1.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is the second one. It picks up. So this story is basically Spider-Man died. Black Widow died when she was still in the Red Room.
Mm-hmm.
And Captain America died during World War II.
Right.
They all wake up in this fantastical sort of Frazetta fantasy, like, island with monsters and frog people and griffins and elves.
Yeah.
And all this crazy stuff. True fantasy. Okay. And then it's just how these characters are interacting. They're not together. They're just interacting separately with the people of this world.
Yeah. And a few of them have met up. But yeah, like you said, they're all interacting differently. And like Black Widow is, you know, they're, where she is, they want to make her queen.
Yeah, everyone's trying to marry Black Widow off. Because, like, I was reading about her character, and it was like, that was her original plan too. In the when she was being trained, she was meant to the guy who kills her in Amazing Fantasy 1.
Yeah,
she was betrothed to marry him.
Yeah,
and then he killed her because she, like, you know, failed the test or whatever. And then now she just comes to this new world, and it's like, you're a wife again,
like, right? And she's like, God damn it!
Yeah, and I mean, the one that she's supposed to marry, this, like, red guy.
Yeah,
she does, like, save his life and stuff.
Mm-hmm. But she doesn't want to be a bride.
No. Who can blame you?
Yeah. This is not her story that she wants to tell.
No.
And then Captain America is trying to help one of, like, the elf ladies and her tribe. And basically, she's, like, in a... almost kind of like an Amazon tribe. It's just all women. And every time they have a boy, they are sacrificed to the, like, orcs.
Yeah. Except for this old dirty...
Yeah.
Who Captain America punches in the face.
Right. And then Spider-Man.
Spider-Man keeps trying to, like, mac on this one girl, Faye. Who's, like, a super badass warrior.
Yeah.
With gold skin.
Yeah.
And she, like, you know, does some digs at him that he's, like, a little kid.
Yeah.
And then she goes to jump on a dragon, and she falls. And then he saves her, mm-hmm. and, you know, he gets a smooch and stuff, so thought that was good for you, Peter. And he's spending time with his uncle.
Yeah, with Uncle Ben.
Who calls him a freak. Peter, you know, Peter, the whole thing about Peter is the Uncle Ben thing, and it's like, we never get to talk to Uncle Ben, he never gets to talk to Uncle Ben. When he first talks to Uncle Ben, it's like, maybe your death taught me, you know, great power comes... dressing like a freak?
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, it's interesting get a perspective of what Uncle Ben would think of the whole Spider-Man thing.
Right. Uncle Ben's become kind of soured, yeah, like, from living on this island.
That too. I mean, to be fair, Aunt May does not like Spider-Man either.
Yeah.
So maybe they are just some two people who are just, like, not down with
the... with the spider. Yeah.
Yeah.
The spider side of Peter.
It's icky.
Yeah.
I guess.
So, yeah, I really like this comic. I think it's just a fun adventure comic. It reminds me of all the old fantasy comics that Marvel used to put out. And just the art's absolutely beautiful. So if you just want like a fun fantasy romp, this is a great one to pick up.
Yeah, and it's a mini series, yeah. 1 out of 5. Mm-hmm. And you get a very interesting reveal on the last page. A baby version of a certain character we know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Maybe we can leave that as a mystery,
yes,
for
I was
people.
Gonna leave that one.
But the baby character is very, very like, whoa. Where is this story going?
Next up, we have Superman 78. DC also did the Batman 89. Was that last week?
We talked about that last week.
Or 2 weeks ago, which I did not like. But this one I liked very much.
Yeah, to contrast the two, the Batman 89 was written by, I don't have his name written down, but the original screenplay writer of, mm-hmm, I think he wrote the screenplay for Batman 89, yeah, mm-hmm, and then the story concept for Batman Returns. So
right,
that, to me, it's like, oh, a natural conclusion. But I did find that comic pretty dry, even, yeah, though I've always wanted to see the Billy Dee Williams Two-Face and stuff.
Right.
It just came across as a little more dry.
Yeah.
This, though, is written by, this is an original idea.
Yeah.
It was not based on some lost screenplay or whatever.
Yeah.
This is just a full-on, like, new comic, but, like, let's continue the Donner, Richard Donner,
right,
Superman comics.
And it's written by Robert Venditti. Wilfredo Torres did the art. Jordi Belair is the colorist.
Beautiful. It looks
gorgeous.
Great.
Yeah, it's absolutely gorgeous. So there's a really nice little memoriam for Richard Donner in the beginning, which I really loved.
Super cool. Which we did lose Richard Donner this year.
Yeah, R.I.P. So yeah, it's just kind of, I think it just takes place I think anywhere, like, after the first movie, right?
Or the second movie, maybe. Yeah. I mean, I feel
well,
like
the second movie came out in 80, right? So
I know that's,
yeah.
But that I was gonna bring that up, but it's like Batman 89 clearly takes place after Batman Returns.
Yeah.
So I just think it's like when that series started.
Okay.
That's how I'm looking at it. I feel like the Kryptonians already came to Earth, and then this is the escalation from there. It's like the next step is Brainiac.
Right. Know? It could be. I guess we'll find out as we get further into it. This is a 6-issue series.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's a great just little action comic. There's, what I love about it is, you, like, in these comics, you don't need a ton of words to get through it, right?
No.
You know, you just have, and it feels like the movie too. You get a little introduction on Krypton, just a little reminder of, like, what happens.
Yeah.
You know, we've seen it before, but it just,
but that's,
it's not
there,
repetitive, though.
That's there to make us
remember,
you know, have the Brainiac connection.
Yeah, exactly. And just a little nostalgia as well. We get to Metropolis, and there's a cute little scene with Clark and Lois getting hot dogs for breakfast, and you get that nice conversational between them.
Yeah, it to me, it maintains the charming humor of, mm-hmm, those Donner movies.
Yes.
Like, which, they have a very specific sort of humor. Like,
right.
And this book, masterfully, like, having rewatched the first one recently, like, slides you right into that world. The art, you know, it doesn't look photorealistic at all, but all of the drawings do look like the actors.
Yeah.
You know, the guy who plays Perry White, I'm like, that's a good caricature of that guy. Like,
oh, definitely.
I was, like, studying that. I'm like, it looks exactly like him,
mm-hmm,
except it's not photorealistic at all. You know, it's just,
yeah,
one of those masterful comic book artist things.
Even Jimmy, too. There's, like,
exactly.
Jimmy's briefly
looks,
in it, but it looks just like
just
Jimmy.
Just like the actor.
Yeah.
And yeah, the pacing is amazing.
It really is.
And I do, to go bounce off what you were saying, like, I love when a writer can get out of the way,
mm-hmm,
and just, you know, you're still writing, it's just your writing is invisible.
Right.
Because you're letting the art speak for itself. And I think, you know, there's a page when he first, you know, unveils, rips open his shirt. Clark Kent rips open his shirt to fight Brainiac. You get the Superman chest, and then you get him flying. It's completely silent. And it's like, a worse writer would have had some interior monologue about, like, I can't let someone do this to people.
Right.
I have to stop them because it's my duty. This is why my parents sent... It's like, no, we don't need any of this. No. Instead, it's silent, and in my head, I heard...
Exactly.
Like, and it works. And he just goes, he, you know, has a, this also very good. This page, there's some cops shooting at Brainiac.
Yeah.
Bouncing off his skull. Tink, tink, tink. Mm-hmm. And he's all low level intelligence confirmed. And then, you know, Superman, very classic movie Superman. Looks to me like you're the one with the thick skull.
Right.
As the bullets bounce off his head. It's like, okay, cool.
Yeah.
You know, it, if you want just a classic little Superman romp, this is, you know, because there's nothing new presented here.
No.
It's just told really well.
Yeah.
It's very charming.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, it's just entertaining.
And that's kind of what I want out of my Superman stories, because that's what Superman is. He should be charming and lovable, and when he's Clark, he should be quirky.
Yeah.
And, you know... And that's what Christopher Reeve did so well, so, you know, in the first two movies. We'll just ignore the second two after that. But because that wasn't his fault. Wasn't his fault.
There's some fun stuff there. Okay. But, but yeah, how spineless he writes Clark Kent is so good. Like, mm-hmm. just all of, like, the risks she takes, awfully dangerous. It's like, it's so perfect making him, you know, knowingly, you know, Clark being so smart to knowingly make him... So, like, yellow belly. Like, just like, come on, buddy. Man up a little bit. Come on.
And Brainiac is exactly who I wanted to see in the Superman movies next.
Of course.
You know, we never got to see him. We still haven't gotten to see him. Yeah, I don't know why.
Seven Superman movies?
I don't understand why.
He's been in eight.
Superman Returns. Why didn't we see Brainiac? And Man of Steel. Why didn't we see Brainiac? Like... Why have they just used the same characters over and over? Like, he's right there.
Never understood.
He's right there. They used him in Smallville.
It's a perfect coupling because it's like, okay, Superman, he's a hammer. He can smash things. Well, how about you smash a computer network that can, like, reinvent itself? It's like, plus, you can't have Superman mowing down a bunch of people.
No.
But if you have 1,000 Brainiac robots, mm-hmm. you get to watch him... Like, carnage, which, you know, we really don't get to get into very much.
Nope. Speaking of carnage, let's get into Count Draco. Draco? Draco. We'll say Draco.
Yeah.
Knuckle Duster. This is from Black Caravan, the Scouts horror sci-fi imprint. God, this comic smells so bad. Okay. Sorry. I love these comics. Like, they look so nice from the Black Caravan imprint, but they really need to get some new ink.
Give them 10 years in the long boxes. They'll be perfect.
Yeah. That ink will settle down.
But yeah, this is like, this is, I think, the second in their sort of shared universe. Phantom Star Killer number mm-hmm. one came out, I don't know, about 6 months ago or something, if I had to remember properly.
Definitely a year ago now, I think.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. I remember liking that one. It's mm-hmm. fun little, like, you know, sci-fi, dark sci-fi adventure.
Yeah, it's all based around their toy collection.
Yeah.
That they have. They made these little toys like, that are kind of based on, like, the He-Man, Master of the Universe. Kind of, yeah, Skeletor. It's like,
I mean, it's very 80s kids, Star Wars, G.I. Joe, and He-Man action figures is what you were playing with.
Yeah.
Let's put them all together.
Right.
It's very, in that world. And, I mean, the designs, as a result, the designs of those two characters specifically is, like, really good.
They are really good, yeah, definitely.
The colors are very bright. You know, like, the world that they're in is pretty grim, but mm-hmm. the characters themselves, you know, he's... Count Draco's bright purple and yellow, and then Phantom Starkiller's like baby blue and neon green and neon orange. Like, I do really, really enjoy those characters, the designs.
Designs are great.
Yeah.
And this is created and co created, co-written, and colored by Peter Gorrell of Killer Bootlegs. I don't know. And illustrated and co-written by Joseph Schmulke.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you
good
know...
Good names there.
It's a... It's just a little sort of Star Wars-esque dark sci-fi story. Count Draco is sort of a Darth Vader and Emperor rolled into one sort of thing. Like,
yeah.
The guy who started experimenting with dark magic and it corrupted him and made him into this sort of ethereal wraith thing, and then he had to use technology to, like, create a suit to house his ghost-like body.
Right.
And he's trying to gain immortality, so there's this girl who has a... All this stuff sounds crazy, but this girl, there's this girl that Phantom Starkiller was supposed to bring to him who has a heart of crypto-crystalline, which will allow Count Draco to live forever.
Right.
And he's not a good dude. He's, like, murders a bunch of dudes very casually in this comic, like, just to cast a spell.
Yeah.
He'll, like, have his people bring in two dudes, and he just puts his hands on their heads, and he's like, okay, I sacrifice them for this spell, just to, like, see what people are doing.
Yeah.
He's killing people left and right.
Oh, yeah. He's just a murderer.
Yeah, yeah. A murdering space tyrant.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's... If any of these things that we're talking about sound entertaining, this is the comic to get into.
Yeah, and I thought it was fun, too. It is a little wordy, like, with
the
story. The gobbledygook.
The gobbledygook stuff.
Yeah, it doesn't need to have all of the narration that it does, like, to get to that story.
Yeah.
Like, I found myself, like, drifting off at some points, being like, what?
Yes. There's a lot of, like, you know... It's both, I get what they're going for with it, where it's like, you want your world to feel lived in, and in their world, I'm sure everyone knows what the juice of Ramanusia is and stuff, but like, all these things, but it's like, it does sort of push me away when I'm trying to read it, getting all this, like, strange word usage and stuff, and you can be really strategic with that, and be very effective, but I think there was... That if I had to have a complaint here, there's a little bit too much of that. It does push me away.
Exactly. Yeah, I was like, am I supposed to know what this is already? Or is this the first time you're mentioning it? Like, there was a lot of that. Too much description at certain points.
Yeah, I think the story, there's enough here that it can hold itself up without as much description.
Right. I think by the time you get to, like, the middle of the comic, that it starts to fade out from that. And then I was like, okay, now I'm on board.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of action at that point. And
It's cool.
Yeah, by the time they get to, like, the battling.
Cyborgs, dark magic.
Yeah.
Spaceships.
Yeah. An orphan magic-powered child.
Yeah.
It's got all of the good points to it. Just a little editing, probably.
Yeah.
Is what this comic needs.
Well, they're continuing, and they got a Vice Admiral Acker comic coming out.
Yeah, that's the next part of this, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he briefly pops up and would inject something into somebody or does something.
Yeah.
He pops up in here very briefly, but it looks like, that'll be the third in this little series that they're doing. And I mean, if you want some...
Comes out in 2022.
Yeah. If you liked the, the Prophet reboot that they did, or Space Riders.
Oh, Space Riders, definitely,
Yeah, if you're like anything Alexis Zirit, this is a comic to check out.
For sure.
If you're into that vibe.
Mm-hmm. All right. So this next comic came out last week. This is from Boom Comics. Eat the Rich, number one, by Sarah Gailey and Pius Buck. I hope I'm saying that right. And colored by Roman Titov. Lots of fun names again in this one. These are all newcomers to the comic scene. Sarah Gailey is a Hugo Award-winning author, though.
Oh, okay. Novelist?
Novelist, yeah.
Okay.
So, I mean, I really liked this book, though I will preface saying that there seems to be, like, a trend in movies right now. Like, starting out, I would say, with, like, Jordan Peele's Get Out.
Yeah.
And then moving along to, like, Ready or Not. And now there's a show on Shudder as well called Slasher. And they all have this common theme of, like, someone go, or, like, you know, maybe a poor person or, like, regular person has, like, a rich partner and they go to their house and, or a family affair of some sort. And then some dark secret comes out and they either get hunted or, you know, something along those lines, right?
It is, at this point, very familiar concept.
Right.
And though I haven't seen those other ones, I mean, when I read this, I was like, this is just like a different version of Get Out.
Right.
Approaching a different thing. Like, basically, you know, if Get Out's about race, this one's just about
class. Right?
I mean, yeah, which is what Us was about. But yeah, this is very much about class. Like, so it's kind of, exploring that through that sort of, like being brought into a world you're not familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
This being uber rich people who live on the beach.
So Ready or Not is that to a T. It's really
okay.
good too if you haven't seen it. Samara Weaving is the star of that.
Yeah, because this was told very well.
Mm-hmm.
It's told clearly. It looks good.
Yeah, the art is great. This is a new artist I have not seen before, and I was like, "Who is this artist? And can I hire them?"
Yeah, and the pacing is like good. It's just that the concept itself I found derivative. I mean, even down to like, don't they talk about it? There's a scene where she like tries to ask one of the help, to help them, and it's like. She, like, gets, like, they're going to eat you alive. You don't ask the help for help. And, like, I feel like there was something like that in Get Out, too, where he, like, tries to connect with the maid. And she's, it's like, no, you're not supposed to, like.
Yeah.
It's just, I've seen this sort of thing before. It's kind of a.
Right. There is, there is that. But she does pace it really, really well. And, like, the language she uses, like, I felt connected to that. Like, being in situations like that. Like. You know, she just, she did that all very, it was very honest, I would say.
Not that kind of girl.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, there's a moment where her boyfriend, like her boyfriend's dad asks her what drink she wants, and then rather than letting her, you know, speak, her boyfriend, who we're made to think is from this world, but different than them.
Of course.
Yeah.
he's learned by being out of it for a while.
He speaks for her and he's like, she's not that kind of girl. It was just a good moment. With the boyfriend, though, I thought it was interesting, like, in terms of storytelling. So we get at the beginning them driving into his world, and then it's like, oh, this guy's this rich, like, asshole. Okay, why is she with this guy? That's like what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
And then they give you the issue of his drinking problem.
Right.
As a pretty, I mean, effective storytelling, but I was, like, aware of it. I'm like, oh, you have a drinking problem. I'm on your side now.
Right.
Oh, you don't want to go there either. Oh, okay. Conveniently, I'm on your side now.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, so he was an alcoholic, and then she it's definitely that story of, like, oh, she's helped him get through this problem. That they've been in on it together, and now he doesn't want to go back to this world because that's where it all started.
Yeah.
So she's been the fixer in the situation.
Yeah.
Where a lot, you know, a lot of people, especially women, can connect to that. And it, like I said, the pacing is really good. It moves along. Like, it's very snappy dialogue.
Yeah.
Which that's a lot of problems that I've been having with a lot of these comics recently. That's where you get lost, is the dialogue, where it doesn't feel real.
Yeah.
This does. It feels like, especially when you're at the party, like, that's where I got lost in it, in a good way.
I started to feel, like, kind of ill a little bit.
Yeah.
Just, like, and it wasn't, so, I mean, spoiler, it's called Eat the Rich.
Right.
I mean, that also, it's like, I like the analogy, but it's also not the most original analogy of the rich being cannibals because, you know, being a rich person, you're basically feeding off of the poor.
Right.
And so it's like making that a literal thing. It's like, that's not the most original concept. Where this goes, where they can take it, I'm interested, you know?
Exactly.
And there is some good storytelling, like, subtleties that, you know, a worse writer, there's a scene where a little kid finds, like, a jawbone on the beach.
Mm-hmm.
A worse writer would have brought attention to that immediately or had someone flip out or something, and no one seems to notice.
Yeah.
in this. And it's like, and no words are spoken about it. So you just, if you're not paying attention.
Yeah, you could miss it.
You could miss it.
Exactly. And I did, I was like, nothing's happening. Like, no, yeah. He's just picking up this jawbone. And that was great.
That's that's a positive. You out. It makes it more frightening that this world is so complacent with this sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And then, at the end there. They're having a party for a groundskeeper who's retiring.
Yeah.
And then at the end, they just...
quote-unquote retiring.
Yeah. I mean, in a Soylent Green sort of way where... Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then they just hack him apart and beat him and start burning him at the end. And it's like,
to be continued.
Continued.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting where they take it. Is it going to be, like, just straight-up cannibalism? Is it witchcraft? Like, are they doing this, like, to gain... some kind of like other riches, like, or do they, that's what they think. So
mystical,
I am,
elements,
right? Exactly.
Who knows?
Yeah, so I am interested. I definitely will read the second issue. Hopefully they do take it further and it's not just like another straight up copy from one of these movies that we've seen recently.
I mean, it's gonna be hard to top you know, old white people stealing black people's bodies to gain immortality.
Yes,
it's gonna be pretty hard to top that one because that was pretty cool. But
Well, you should see Ready or Not too.
Yeah,
that one's actually really good as well. All right, let's move right along to Echolands.
Just wow.
Yeah, this is pretty amazing.
Let's start with, you should go pick this book up.
Yeah, definitely.
Like, get Echolands. This sort of thing does not come out. Mm-mm. I mean, and we'll get into that. But like, this has been a long time coming. This project. Yeah. And this sort of thing does not emerge very often. This is a rare treat.
So this is J.H. Williams, number one from Image Comics. So he does pretty much the art and design. Dave Stewart colored it. Todd Klein does the letters. And
he co-wrote with W. Hayden Blackman.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, but J.H. Williams. So J.H. Williams and Blackman are the co-creators and co-writers.
Right.
And then J.H. Williams did all the art and design. And this is from a character in a world he had conceived of, I think, when he was a kid.
Yeah.
And then they've specifically been talking about this project, I think, trying to get it off the ground for like 15 years.
Yeah. It's just one of the most beautiful comics ever, too.
No, ever. I mean, it's the most beautiful comic of the year, and nothing else that comes out this year will top this, except for maybe issue two of this,
you know,
or something. Right. But, like, this is astonishing looking.
Yeah.
Landscape.
Yeah, it's landscape, which at first I was like, oh, no, a landscape comic. But luckily they did it not like how Brian K. Vaughan did his landscape comic.
Oh, that was
comic.
Like two landscapes.
Yeah, that was like...
That was very wide.
Right.
Yeah, this is just a regular comic book format, but, you know, where the staples are on where what would be the top.
Right.
You know, it'll fit in your long box exactly perfect.
Exactly.
Which I think is why, if you're going to do this sort of thing, you gotta make it somewhat normalized.
Yeah. And it's like a fairy tale. It's what it is.
We're full on thrust into this world. This is not a comic you just read once and you're like, got it.
Right.
Like, this is like, you gotta go back and pore over what is going on and all the deep, like, because the art, it is a dense book. Mm-hmm. And not in a bad way. Like,
no, not at all.
Like, I almost am like, this is like a great piece of literature that I have in my hands.
Yeah, and... And it's great, too, because it's not wordy in any...
No.
At all.
No, and yeah, that's not what I mean by dense. Yeah. It's just, there's, like, not that much happens in this issue.
No.
But every frame is packed full of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And you want to, like, understand what's going on. And there's things that are hinted in a way that, you know, maybe we were a little critical of the stuff in... Count Draco with like the world building, trying to make the world feel lived in.
Right.
This does that, and while I still don't understand what's going on, it begs me to like reread and like try and like decipher things. I don't know. It's a very interesting sort of thing that I'm having these reactions from it.
Right. And like, so the main character is Red, And even on, like, the second page, you can, like, see so many things that are happening in this world that, or, sorry, fourth page. We're in, like, San Francisco. As you can see, like, the wharf of San Francisco. Maybe? Like, is that where we are? It's a fantasy world, right?
Yeah, so, like, in their world, things are continuously shifting. They have some comment where it's like, these streets don't maintain their shape for more than 2 weeks.
Right.
We have characters of, like, I don't know, 5 different art styles. Like,
yeah.
People painted in color, people painted in black and white, someone who has, like, classic comic book dots on them, mm-hmm. then, you know, like, more modern comic book art.
Yeah. We also have, like, I can see Sandman back there.
Yeah.
I can
see that dragon. Oh, there's definitely hints and details and all. This guy looks kind of like Nemo from, League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Mm-hmm. You could just sit here and pick out characters probably from different comics for hours.
And it really is, like, there's just so much.
Yeah, there's so much happening. So, like I said, I said earlier, this is definitely it's going to be like a classic fairy tale at some point, is what I think this book is turning into. She is, I think, Little Red Riding Hood. Hope.
Little Red Riding Hood. If Little Red Riding Hood could blow up dudes,
murder people,
blow up fascist cop faces.
Yeah,
you get a double page, which is, you know, the widest landscape panel you can have of, like, these Nazi fascist dudes' heads exploding.
Yeah,
not Nazis. You know, Nazi-like.
Yeah,
Nazi-esque. Mm-hmm. And then you also have a very, like, magic dark lord figure.
Yeah, and it's this person who's trying to capture her or what she has stolen, right?
Very scary.
Yeah. So just go out and buy this book. We have lots of copies. If you can't get it from us, get it from someplace else.
Yeah. Get this book. I mean, this is like some once every decade sort of comic sort of thing.
There's also some fun stuff in the back. J.H. Williams gives you a really nice afterword about how he came to coming up with the comic. There's, like, cute little ads in the back, like fake ads.
Yeah. There's an interview in world with the, like, Taros Demont, who's, like, the leader of this world. And you get, like, a sort of, we don't know this character yet, but we will.
Right.
And with this interview, we're able to, like, glean some of it's more world building, but in, like, a really cool sort of way.
And a playlist,
which awesome. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Love someone with some, well, this is good musical taste, but also very diverse musical taste.
Yeah Everywhere from David Bowie to Mastodon.
Yodorowsky's, White Stripes. Mm-hmm. A lot of Ennio Morricone,
Funkadelic.
Yeah.
So,
Killing Joke, Motorhead.
Want to hang out with J.H. Williams.
Yeah.
He lives not far from us, so we've been trying to get him to do a signing for years. Maybe
one day we'll get him.
Come
on in.
Yeah,
four pages
come sign
of
our
a musical, you know. This really is like I said, literature, but it really does, especially with the backup material, mm-hmm. and all that stuff. It makes this feel like, you know, a work bigger than just a floppy comic book.
Yeah, definitely. So we're excited about issue 2. Come buy that.
Oh, yeah.
Quick news, and then we were going to take a break, but now I don't think that's going to happen. This is pretty entertaining. So Scarlett Johansson has reportedly been approached by Warner Brothers for a DC role, because she is done with Disney.
Seemed like it.
Yeah, or Disney's done with her now, too, so because of the impending lawsuit.
Also, that whole thing is a quagmire.
Yeah.
Of just all sort. I mean, it looks like Scarlett absolutely has a lot of reason for all this, and Disney just, like, not handling any of this very well.
Not at all.
Like, I mean, the big glaring thing to me was, like, responding to her lawsuit with, like, you know, because she didn't get money from, as much money from, because Black it Widow, had a, yeah. because it had a joint release.
Yeah.
And then them being, like, very snarky, like, does Miss Johansson forget that there's a pandemic going on? And then, like, 1 week later, literally, revealing Shang-Chi will be only in theaters. So which is it, Disney?
Yeah. Exactly.
Is it not a good time because it's a pandemic, yeah. or do you want people to go to the theaters?
Right. And it, well, it's, they're giving it a 45-day release.
Yeah, which all of this I think is yeah. fair, and should be, I mean, something akin to that should be a standard.
Yeah.
Where there's a certain time period, and then, yeah, this isn't the day and age where it's like you get your VHS, you know, 9 months after the movie came out. It's like, no, that doesn't work now, but, you know, a month and a half, 2 months.
Yeah.
Then you get your streaming. That works for me.
Right. So yeah, DC has approached her.
Wow.
And she is interested, apparently. They couldn't comment on what role it is yet. But we have some guesses. So it's definitely going to be like her own movie. Mm-hmm. Because
Yeah. It'd be a Scarlett Johansson starring vehicle.
Mm-hmm. So I have some guesses. Let's see what you think. I think it's either going to be maybe Power Girl, but that would be weird at the same time because of the background of Power Girl, obviously.
I don't know anything about the character except for that she has a very interesting outfit.
Yes, there is that. The square cutout would be weird too at this point. But well,
it's Warner Brothers. They're doing whatever. They're trying to push the envelope.
They want
to push
it. Yeah, no.
I don't know.
I mean, Catwoman, obviously, they wouldn't want to do a spinoff for that. But they have the new Batman movie coming out.
Yeah, I mean, I do think it does seem like, thankfully, that Warner Brothers is opening it up and allowing their stuff to just not be this one universe.
Thing, right.
Which is, I think is great. I mean, if Robert Pattinson, Batman, wants to meet somebody else in the DC universe, fine. But he also doesn't need to.
Right.
And then Ben Affleck can still be in a Flash movie. I'm fine with it. You know, like, give me all the different versions.
Yeah, once they do Flashpoint, they'll have the multiverse open.
Yeah.
So
you could have, but I mean, I just say that to be like, you could have two Catwomen.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter.
I also think they could do a Cilda Poison Ivy movie.
No, that would be great.
That would be awesome.
If that's it, that would be it. Because you have Margot Harley. Robbie.
Yeah, exactly.
Who's been like, what are we doing?
Yeah.
Bring this storyline in. Mm-hmm. I think Scarlett Johansson would be an amazing Poison Ivy.
Me too. That's my favorite choice.
Wow.
Yeah. So, those are my three top choices. And then, I have one more. And then Zatanna, I also think would be great as well. Because they've been trying to do this Justice League Dark movie forever. But this has not been able to kick off, so they could do a Zatanna solo movie and then ride into a Justice League Dark movie. But I don't know if she wants to be part of another, like, you know,
team thing.
Yeah. But that would be fun as well, because they could do whole magic, bring the magic into the DCU.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. So I didn't know about any of this before right now.
Yeah.
So I don't really have any other suggestions, and I think you nailed it with the Poison Ivy one. That's one makes favorite. The most sense, right? Because it's like, look, Scarlett Johansson is a major sex symbol. She's known for all of this. Poison Ivy is like that seductress type character, but better. Like, she's not the enchantress, which is like, whatever. She's like this next level because she also has like purpose to all of that, you know, protecting the plants.
Exactly.
We can all get on board with that, but it's like, oh, I don't know if killing people, but also I support what you're...
Yeah, and it's good for right now, too, with the environment being what it is,
Huge.
Yeah.
Huge.
So
like,
they could double back on that and be like, well, I'm saving the planet, murder, saving the planet, and add Harley, too.
Yes, yeah,
so
yeah,
they could
go.
They could have a Harley road trip.
It could be good for the environment and queer representation.
Exactly.
Because, I mean, everybody wants to see Harley and Poison Ivy's, you know... that romance or whatever it is, just play out and see that sort of thing. And to have, I mean, because we talked about Suicide Squad, like Margot Robbie
just kills
is made to play, or Harley Quinn, the character, was made for
Margot Robbie. Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Rarely in any of these movies have we gotten someone who is like paired as well with that character. She is bigger than Suicide Squad.
Definitely.
She like sticks out like a sore thumb in a good movie as something transcendent, sort of. And it's like, if you can get that, and I think Scarlett has that, like, she could play a jerk real well.
Oh, yeah.
She can like be snarky, you know, which is like how I interpret Poison Ivy, is like she's like above it all, kind of, in a way.
Yeah, and we haven't gotten a good Poison Ivy yet either. It wasn't
Emma's fault.
And it wasn't her fault. And now with like special effects for what it is too, and practical effects too, just to have like a really nice costume in general just for Poison Ivy would be great to see.
Yeah, the costume. So. I mean, she's had red hair before, so it would work.
she can pull off the red hair.
She can pull it off.
She can do it.
No, that I'd be down. That'd be awesome.
And then lastly, just on movies to recommend and not to recommend, nobody watch Reminiscence on HBO Max. It's terrible.
Oh, no.
It's written and directed by Lisa Joy, who is the wife of Jonathan Nolan, who's Christopher Nolan's brother, and they also do Westworld together.
Oh, okay.
That's why I thought it was going to be good. They're like, from the writer and director of Westworld, and I was like, oh, that's good. Got to be good then, right?
Hugh Jackman.
Yeah, Hugh
Great.
Jackman. Yeah, well, I mean, he's fine. He's not the best actor, let's be real. Like, he's not like an Academy Award winning actor or anything. Like,
he can dance.
He's fine. He's fine.
I know, that is not a response.
He can dance. I can't wait to see him dance in this movie.
I would love to see him dance in more movies.
Oh my God. Well, this is like, it looks like Blade Runner, you know, it even has like that story, like it's supposed to be like a noir, like future noir.
It's about memory.
Yeah.
See, I haven't seen the movie, but the trailer, I thought of The Fountain. Also Hugh Jackman.
I fucking hate that movie.
I like that movie, but it's like, that's Hugh Jackman reliving past lives.
Right.
In like three different lives or something like that.
Yeah, it's like that, pretty much. It's like a cross between that, Memento, and, which makes sense because, obviously, Christopher Nolan.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then Minority Report, a little bit of that thrown in as well.
Okay.
And just like all had a baby, but then it's directed so poorly. Like, you think, I didn't realize it was Lisa Joy who wrote it. I thought it was, I don't know, I didn't know it was a woman, let's just put it that way, because after I was watching it, I felt so bad for these women characters. Like, they do not pass the Bechdel test. It's like, there could just be a lamp sitting there, and the men just, like, walking over them the entire time.
Interesting.
It's really disappointing.
Especially coming from a female filmmaker.
That's what I mean, yeah, totally. And then the dialogue, we were just talking about how we read some comics with such great, strong dialogue. This is probably the poorest dialogue I have seen in a movie in a long time. And I watched some bad horror movies. This is terrible.
Dang.
It's just like Hugh Jackman, you know, doing the classic, like, noir narration over.
That's tough.
It is tough.
If it's not 1946,
right.
It's pretty tough.
And that's what she's going for. And this is just drivel.
Yeah.
And it's hard to watch.
Well, I look forward to the director's cut version where they get rid of all the narration, just like Blade Runner, because, you know, right. Of course the narration's there because the studio forced it.
Yeah.
That's not true. I'm just kidding.
No. I'd rather watch that 20 times over than ever watch this again.
Yeah.
So yeah. Don't watch Reminiscence. Right. Do watch Dr. Death on Peacock. Yeah, this is a great show with Christian Slater, Alec Baldwin, and Joshua Jackson from Dawson's Creek fame.
Oh.
Yeah, but he is fantastic. He plays Dr. Dunch, who, this is all based on true events, and he plays a neurosurgeon who maimed and killed over, I think, 20 to 30 patients in real life back in 2012 to 2014.
Oh.
Yeah. It is brutal.
Okay.
But fantastic. Show's fantastic, but brutal.
Sounds good.
Yeah. Also, was it Cherry? Brand New Cherry Flavor on Netflix.
Oh, okay.
This show is like if David Lynch and David Cronenberg had a baby.
I'd I would raise that baby.
Yeah.
Wow.
Raise this baby and made this show on Netflix. This Whoa. Is fantastic.
Okay.
Highly recommend. I think it's just a short series or mini series on Netflix. Yeah. Watch the show. It's fantastic.
Okay.
Yep. Those are my recs for the week.
I love those Davids. So yeah. You sold me.
Yeah. All right. I think that's it for this week.
Yeah.
Right? Do you have anything else?
No. Just going to do our plugs and
do our plugs.
Head out.
Cool. Plug away.
Yeah. So you can follow me on Instagram at Robert Negowesko, ROBERT_NEGOESCO. That's where I post all my comics work. Mm-hmm.
Find me at Jessa Balboni on all of the things, Instagram, Twitter, and that's everything.
Yeah. The social media
stuff. The social media. And that's JessaBalboni. I can spell.
It's your name, right?
Yeah. I'm dyslexic. It's hard.
Well, all right. Go get some comics, everybody. Read some good books. Watch some good stuff. Mm-hmm. But most of all,
escape into comics. Thanks so much. We'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.